Welcome to Deconstructed. I'm TJ O'Hara, the principal political analyst for IVN, the Independent Voter News. Our goal on Deconstructed is to break down important political issues with outstanding guests so you can develop your own more informed opinion. My guest today is John Cox, Republican candidate for governor of California. In 2018, Mr. Cox was the Republican nominee and runner-up for the same office. He worked his way through college and earned a CPA and law degree, and then became a successful businessman and entrepreneur, developing skills he thinks differentiates him from the other candidates. Mr. Cox also has been active in the community for many years, including his founding of an affiliate of Rebuilding Together, a nationwide organization that repairs the homes of low-income seniors and the disabled. He's here to discuss California's upcoming recall vote and his candidacy for the office of governor if the recall is successful. Welcome to Deconstructed, John.
Nice to be with you, TJ. Thanks for having me on.
John, before we begin, I want to share something with our audience. I don't happen to believe that any candidate, regardless of party, can win a statewide office in California without the support of independent voters. As a result, IVM made an effort to invite every leading candidate to join me on Deconstructed, including Governor Newsom. To date, no one other than you has chosen to accept the invitation to discuss their candidacy in this forum. So, thank you on behalf of all independents for that.
Independents are a big force in California. There's almost 7 million voters who are not registered Republicans or Democrats. And so they hold the key to elections in the future.
With that being said, John, you lost the 2018 gubernatorial election by what in California is a relatively narrow margin of 8.3%. I mean, Pelosi and Waters win by 50, 60% every time. So yeah, you really had a tight race with the current governor. What makes you feel confident first that Governor Newsom will be recalled?
Well, the state's actually very different than what it was in 2018, TJ. The wildfires are worse. Homelessness and housing crises are both worse. We have a terrific water shortage in this state. Farmers are not able to plant. Places like Mendocino, you can't go to the bathroom in restaurants. They'll send you out to a porta potty because there's not enough water. It's crazy. Electricity blackouts still occur. We have rising crime rates. And at the same time, our taxes are the highest in the country. Our business climate's one of the worst. Education, or the pandemic has kept our kids out of school. Our education results are some of the worst in the country. We're spending $90 billion a year on education, almost $40 billion of which is administration. It's not even getting in the classroom. You know, there's a lot of problems in this state. The good news is, though, TJ, is that they're all fixable. They're management issues. They're judgment issues. They're not political issues. And Gavin Newsom needs to be recalled because he's just not a good manager. He's out there having dinners with lobbyists and giving breaks to special interest groups and the like. He wants to be president someday, and he doesn't really care about the voters of California. He takes them for granted. He cares more about the voters of Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina, and the interest groups that are going to be important in the presidential race. So this recall is about getting a better management for this state, and it's about time.
John, do you think the mail-in structure will impact the recall and potentially your candidacy?
No, I actually don't. There's a lot of people who do. I certainly would want to have polling places, and if I'm the governor, I'm going to end this nonsense of just mailing ballots out all over the place. I think it is an invitation to fraud. Having said that, the election was all mail in November of 2020, and I know some people feel that there was fraud, but in California, despite the fact that there was a landslide in the presidential race, there's a lot of liberal initiatives that Gavin Newsom endorsed even that failed. The left didn't get their tax increase. They didn't get affirmative action. They didn't get rent control. They didn't get an end to cash bail. Those all went down to defeat. And I would have thought that if they were monkeying around with the ballots that, you know, those might have passed, but they didn't. And that leads me to believe that this recall hopefully will be done properly and without major fraud.
Will the funding disparity between what you experience as a candidate versus what the governor is allowed to raise relative to a recall, which is uncapped, will that have an impact?
Well, listen, he's getting a lot of money from his crony buddies. all the unions, big businesses like Netflix. I mean, it's hilarious. Reed Hastings, the founder of Netflix, put $3 million into the governor's anti-recall campaign. And of course, the media, the general media, didn't report the fact that Netflix is trying to get a special piece of legislation passed that would enable them to basically carry over $100 million or $200 million or something like that of tax credits from filming. You know, just a little detail they didn't put in. And so, you know, the cronies and the insiders are trying to support Mr. Newsom. That's all the more reason why we need a businessman outsider like myself. And we need to put an end to this kind of pay-to-play politics.
And when you talk about pay-to-play, I couldn't help but notice the other day that second round of stimulus checks just went out.
Yes.
So the governor is doing some interesting things of moving the shells around to make things line up. Any comment on that?
He can't defend anything else he's done, TJ. The housing crisis, the homelessness crisis, the shortage of water and electricity, the wildfires out of control, crime is rising, you know, homelessness all over the street, the taxes, the regulations, the business climate, businesses leaving like Tesla and Hewlett Packard and Charles Schwab. You know, he can't defend any of that. So what's left to do? Hand out money to people to try to get their votes. But I don't think it's going to work, TJ. I think people are smarter than that. I think they're recognizing that they'd rather have water and electricity and an affordable house than a $600 check. That's not going to make the difference.
John, if the recall is successful, let's assume that for a moment. What qualifies you to lead the fifth largest economy in the world?
Well, you know, I built a business over 40 years, TJ. It's not a huge business. I'm not a billionaire, but it's a good business and it's a successful business. And it's gotten from zero to having $300 million worth of assets, and we deliver results. I think that's the big difference. I'm the chief executive. I built it from zero, from a starting block. It takes solving problems. That's what I've done for 40 years. I've not had an easy road. Mr. Newsom, on the other hand, was put in business by Gordon Getty. His aunt is Nancy Pelosi. I mean, he's had pretty much the way paved for him through his entire life. I've had a struggle from the bottom and solve problems and hold people accountable. I think that's the big difference, TJ. In my businesses, 40 years of it, I've had to hold people accountable. And that doesn't happen with politicians or media celebrities, which is really all California's had. We haven't had a real true businessman as the governor of this state. And I think it's about time. Other states like Maryland and Massachusetts have had businessmen as governors, and they're very successful. They're very popular. Even though they're blue states, they're Republican businessmen, and they're very popular. So I think California is going to join that crowd, if you will, and get a Republican businessman as the governor.
Now, John, there are 45 other candidates. So what distinguishes you from the other candidates?
Well, again, I ran in 2018, so I'm better known. I think that's a factor. But I've built a business over 40 years. I don't know of any of the other candidates that have done that. We have a radio guy who's a radio talker. We have a reality TV star, Caitlyn Jenner. We have a politician, the former mayor of San Diego, who did some really lousy real estate deals, pretty corrupt real estate deals when he was mayor. We have a young assemblyman who's a nice young man and very sharp, but you know, he's very young and green and 36 years old or so. And I don't think, as you say, the fifth largest economy of the world should be in the hands of a 36-year-old. I'm 66. I don't think I would have even been qualified to run this state at 36 years old. It's a big job. There's 300,000 employees in the state of California. There's a $270 billion a year budget, both of which are way too big, but be that as it may, you're going to have to make a lot of judgments and hold people accountable to get changes made in this state. And I think it takes a little bit of snow on the roof, as they say, to get that kind of thing done.
John, we're going to take a quick break and talk about your solutions for California when we come back. Welcome back. My guest today is John Cox, Republican candidate for the office of Governor of California if the recall passes. John, let's dive into the real issues. Despite California's massive economy, it ranks last with regard to best places to do business.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us why that's the case. How much is driven by the governor's office, and what would you do to correct that?
Well, it's overregulation and overtaxation. Those are the reasons. It's also the housing crisis. So I'll take each one in series. First of all, overregulated. We've got some of the worst regulations and most extensive regulations in the country. We're a judicial hellhole. We're one of the only states that empowers private lawyers to act as attorney generals to sue businesses for payroll violations and labor law violations. We have a history of just having incredible regulation. You have to have a license in California to shampoo someone's hair. The licensing and continuing education requirements are legendarily complex in the state. If you can even get the bureaucracy to respond to you, people have told me it takes 6 to 8 months just even to form a corporation or an LLC in this state. And we have a huge franchise tax as well as a corporate tax. We also, you know, have some of the highest tax rates in the country. You know, most small businesses, TGA, are taxed as flow-through entities. I'm a CPA. I obviously know a lot about this. So most businesses in California are LLCs or partnerships or subchapter S corporations, and the income flows through and is taxable on the individual returns. Well, California's tax rates are some of the highest. They are the highest in the country. They go up to 13%, but you know, even the 9.3% bracket is for income between $58,000 and $300,000. That's middle class. That's a small business. That's a 9.3%. Just to give you a frame of reference, that's over twice the top rate in Colorado. So Californians pay twice or more than twice what millionaires pay in Colorado. And then, of course, there's other factors like the cost of living. The cost of housing is incredibly high in this state, and that makes it tough on small businesses. It's very tough to compete when you have to pay employees 30, 40, 50% more than what your competitors do that may be in Arizona or Utah or Texas or someplace else. When, if you're manufacturing an item, your cost of payroll is a huge part of that cost. And the cost of housing here would make you uncompetitive. And it's not just the cost of housing, TJ. It's the cost of electricity. Our electricity rates are twice that of Texas, three or four times that of some other states. And our cost of water and other utilities happens to be some of the highest in the country. And our gasoline cost is $5 to $6 a gallon, whereas in most states around the country right now, it's $2, $2.50, maybe $3. So our cost of doing business and regulations and the trial lawyers, it adds up to a pretty toxic mix for any business wanting to do business in this state.
What would you do relative to taxes and loopholes, for example?
Well, I've proposed a 25% cut across the board, a $30 billion total tax cut. But let's face it, TJ, it's not going to be easy to get that through the legislature. I'm going to start day one helping to change the legislature. We're going to identify at least 20 assembly seats and 10 Senate seats, and I'm going to recruit candidates, and I'm going to raise money, and we're going to try to do our part. Independent voters are a big part of that because, as I mentioned before, there's 7 million or so voters that are not registered Republicans or Democrats. They're that for a reason. They don't trust either party. And I think they're looking for a home. They want somebody to represent them. And so I think they'll listen to my arguments about taxes and about regulations and about housing and water and electricity. And so I think these voters are gettable and they'll make the difference. And so that's how I'll get these things done.
Now, John, you've talked about zero-based budgeting as a CPA, so I can appreciate where you're coming from on that. How would you prioritize spending?
Well, listen, in my business, I don't waste money, period, end of story. Full stop, as the governor would say. The state wastes incredible amounts and spends it unproductively. I've used zero-based budgeting in my businesses forever. You start with zero. You don't just take last year's budget and add 5% to it. You make sure you account for everything, and you also make sure that everything is justified and unproductive spending is canceled out. You know, TJ, when I'm elected governor, I'll have 3,000 appointed positions to fill. Think about that for a second. Why should I have 3,000 appointed positions? That's ridiculous. We have incredible numbers of boards and commissions that have been around for ages and that are just resting places for old politicians. We also have famous mismanagement of agencies like the Employment Division, which has a huge backlog and sent out $30 billion in fraud payments. the DMV, where it can take 2 to 3 hours to get your license in California versus 15 minutes in places like Florida. We have Caltrans, which spends twice what Texas spends to build a mile of road. The Division of Prisons, it costs us $125,000 a year to house a prisoner in the state. We pay prison dentists $500,000 a year. Prison psychiatrists make $700,000 a year. Some of these salaries and these benefits are just outrageous. And I think the voters need to be apprised of them. And we need a leader who's going to hold them accountable.
So with the massive level of taxation that we currently have, we still have the highest rate of homelessness in the nation.
Yeah.
What would you do to address that issue?
Well, the politicians for years have done this housing first, which is nonsense. They just put people up in hotels. They actually buy hotels for 2 or 3 times what they're worth and house homeless there and hope that they'll get well. Well, that's not going to work. Listen, Britney Spears didn't need a conservator, but there's a lot of people living on the street that are strung out on drugs or alcohol or are mentally ill that need help. And of course, there's this percentage of people on the street who are just kicked out of their apartments because the cost got away from them and they couldn't afford it. And that's why they're living in an RV or in a tent. We've got to bring down the cost of housing. I'm in the housing business, TJ, as you might know. I've been building and managing apartments, multifamily, for 40 years. And the cost of building in California is outrageous. In Indiana, where I'm based, I can build for $125 a square foot. California, it's $450, $500. And most of that cost is government. It's delays and taxes and fees and lawsuits and all kinds of mandates. It's government cost. And it should be easy to change. And I hope to do it with the legislature's help. There's some executive orders I'll be able to do. But we've got to get somebody that's going to bring down the cost of building to address this awful, awful, uncompassionate homeless problem.
Despite California's economic prowess, its education system ranks anywhere from 37th to 41st in the nation. What would you do to address that issue?
Well, the reason is the politicians are in control of the schools. The parents found that out in the pandemic. I mean, they wanted the schools open. They wanted their kids in front of a teacher, at least most of them did, and they were unable to do that. Costco and Home Depot workers went to work. Policemen and firemen went to work. Our frontline healthcare workers went to work. But the teachers decided that they weren't going to go to work. And that's because it's all politics. We got to get the politicians and get the political issues out of the classroom, TJ. As I said at the outset, we're spending something like 40% of our annual budget on education, on administration. That's got to end. I want to drive that down to 30 or 20%. If I spent 40% of my business on administration, I'd be out of business in no time. My competitors would eat my lunch. So we've got to cut the cost of administration and bureaucracy. We've got to get more money into the classrooms, and we got to get the parents involved. I'm a big proponent of school choice, education savings accounts or vouchers that would give the power to parents. That's not an end to public education because those are public dollars. They're public dollars that go to the parents, just like Pell Grants in the federal system go to individuals or GI Bill payments go to people who served in the military. We can certainly give the money that we're spending on education to the child or to the parents and let them spend it, and they'll demand a quality and competitive school. The unions oppose this, obviously, because they want control. Money is power and control is money, and that's what they want. So I don't think that serves parents or children or the future of California.
John, we're going to take a quick break and talk more about your solutions for California when we come back. Welcome back. My guest today is John Cox, Republican candidate for the office of Governor of California. John, let's move away from economics and get into public safety. We're number 31 overall across a lot of different issues, number 46 in the nation out of 50 in personal and residential safety. What's your position on crime? What are we doing right? What are we doing wrong? How would you change it?
Well, the governor has really made a bunch of mistakes on this. During COVID, he let a lot of people out of jail. I'm reminded of the case of Matthew Garcia, a young man accused of child abuse, and he was let out of jail because of COVID and promptly went home and beat his 2-month-old child to death. You know, we've got to protect people. That's the number one rule and the number one role of government. And Mr. Newsom has redefined parole. He's let people out of jail that shouldn't be let out of jail. He's now redefining parole for something like 70,000 inmates to get them out of the prisons. And, you know, my philosophy is that if you punish crime, you get less of it. And I don't think there should be anything that like a 3 or 4 time convicted criminal. If someone commits a 1 or 2 or 3 crimes, they should be going away forever. They've demonstrated that they're not willing to comport with society. One of the first things Newsom did when he was governor was end executions. And even though I'm personally against the death penalty, I am in favor of doing the voters' will. Well, the voters of this state voted twice to keep capital punishment. As a matter of fact, they voted for an initiative that would accelerate it. Yet Mr. Newsom didn't care about that. He went and ended it on his own initiative, and that's wrong. We've seen crime soaring. We've got liberal prosecutors in San Francisco and LA that have said that they're not going to prosecute resisting arrest. I think a lot of the problems we've had where criminals and police have gotten into altercations are because of resisting arrest. You know, listen, we need to make sure that we do something about rogue police officers, as rare as that is. But we need to support the police, and I would certainly fully fund police efforts, and I would back the police. I don't want to see an end to qualified immunity. I don't want to see the burden of proof shipped so that police have to prove that they weren't at fault. I think we should certainly hold police accountable for their actions, but my God, we need to make sure that we have people that want to serve as law enforcement officials, and we're not going to do that if we don't support them.
You know, you mentioned the new age practice of the district attorneys who unilaterally decide if and when the law should be applied. Couldn't help but notice the other day, George Soros, who funded the DAs that you mentioned in LA and San Francisco, just dropped $500,000 into the pot for Governor Newsom to try and fight the recall. So that's interesting. Let's transition into another public safety issue. We have the highest number of COVID-19 cases and deaths in the nation. Now, in fairness, on a per capita basis, we're about number 37 out of 50, still not good. What did the governor get right? What did he get wrong? And how would you address the pandemic if you become governor?
Well, you know, I got COVID very early myself, March 15th of 2020, and I was in bed sick when Mr. Newsom shut down the state. And I somewhat agreed with that. I think, you know, it was 2 weeks to slow the spread was probably a good thing to give us a breather and chance to really assess what was going on here. But as it dragged on, it really destroyed a lot of businesses. It kept our kids out of school, and I wouldn't have done that. I think the heavy-handedness of that, the picking and choosing of winners and losers, Costco and Home Depot were just fine, and little stores, mom and pops, were crushed. He also decided that churches weren't essential, and he's paid for that because he lost in court on every occasion and cost the taxpayers $5 or $10 million in legal fees. So, you know, the governor's management of this crisis was inconsistent at best, and he shut the state down so long. I think the approach of people in Florida, you know, has a much older population mix, much more elderly, and their death rate was roughly similar to what California's has been. They have a surge now, but so does Oregon and Hawaii. So I don't know that it's necessarily the result of management as much as it is some of the incidents of the variant. And frankly, I think in some respects, it's also the result of loose immigration policies. We're basically importing COVID to some degree. That's happened since the Biden administration took over and has sent mixed signals to people all over the world that they're willing to take in, you know, literally thousands or millions of people that are fleeing bad governments in other places. We can't let everybody into this country. We should be welcoming. I certainly believe in a nation that welcomes people who want to become Americans and want to contribute to the American dream and want to seek their own fortune. But we have to make sure that we know who's coming in. We have to make sure that people coming in aren't criminals and aren't intending to commit crimes. And that requires some investigation and some judgment. I know that the tragedy in Afghanistan has yielded a number of refugees, and I think California should welcome any that they can, but they should make sure that they're really truly not criminals and that they're truly coming to America to become Americans and not just as a temporary way station. We've got a real problem on our border. I live in San Diego. I read the newspaper and see the reports of drugs and guns and human trafficking that goes on across our southern border. It's horrendous because the country to our south is not very well managed. We don't have this problem with Canada. That country is relatively well managed. But Mexico was a disaster, unfortunately, and we have to deal with it. And we just can't wish it away. We've got to build a wall and make sure we have forces that are protecting us.
Now, California is number one in illegal immigrants with about 25% of the total population. And if you exclude Texas, Florida, and New York, California approximately is the home to as many illegal immigrants as there are in 46 other states. So what's your position? I'm assuming I can guess, but what's your position on sanctuary state status?
I would end it. I certainly think law enforcement should work with each other to get criminals out of our midst. I don't want the local police going door to door and doing the job of ICE, but I certainly want them to coordinate when they see a criminal. And that's not allowed in the sanctuary state status. And I think that's wrong. I certainly would end that or do what I could to end it. And, you know, we again, our role is, you know, in the government is to protect people. And we need to do that, both with crime and with illegal immigration, but also with wildfires. You know, we need to make sure that people are protected.
We have the fifth highest risk of natural disasters, but that's no governor's fault, but preparedness is. So how would you proactively address wildfires and known drought cycles that are likely to be suffered?
Well, again, these are mismanagement issues because in terms of the drought, we should have been building desalination and recycling and reservoirs. California's always had wet and dry years. It's not unusual. And so we need to make sure that we are prepared for that. Same thing really obtains for wildfire control. California should have much better forest management. The governor's been caught lying about his results in that regard, said he was doing 90,000 acres and only did 11,000. But more than that, really hasn't undertaken the effort. We also need to make sure we have a response. It is absolutely beyond irresponsible to let these fires turn into infernos. You got to get these fires fast. We have satellite technology that can identify the fires, but we need to make an investment in airplanes. Helicopters aren't nearly enough because helicopters can't fly in real strong winds. And so you've got to have large fixed-wing tankers that, and I'm talking like 50 or 100 of them, that can go in one after the other. The minute you spot a fire, bam, you go in with overwhelming force and you dump tanks and tanks of water and retardant and give the firefighters a chance. Don't let these turn into infernos. We also should do what we can, TJ, about rebuilding our timber and lumber industry. We used to have a vibrant one in California and we've let it go to Canada. We now import most of our lumber from Canada and other places. And we used to have a great business in California. We should revive that. And the timber companies took care of the forest. They built fire breaks. They did prescribe burns. They did things that would, you know, built roads that would help manage the forest. They took out dry tinder and dead trees. And that was a help to the government, both the federal and state. So right now, all we get from Governor Newsom is a bunch of finger pointing and blame shifting. And that's what politicians do. Business guys like me actually solve the problems. We don't have the luxury of just pointing fingers. We just got to get the job done.
So do you feel that it's more of a management issue than, you know, the suggestion from the governor's office, climate change is driving so much of this? What's your position on climate change and what's the true driver?
Global pollution is a problem. But the way to fix it isn't to have Californians pay $6 a gallon for gasoline and twice the national average for electricity. You know, that's making politicians feel good and brag about what we're doing here, but it's not doing much for global pollution. Listen. Right now, China is producing more pollution than the rest of the world combined, and India is right behind them. They're building coal-fired power plants like nobody's business because they need electricity. They've got literally hundreds of millions of people who don't have computers or cell phones and want to drive electric cars, and they need electricity. They have got manufacturing that they ship to the rest of the world that needs electricity. So they're building coal plants. Well, why are they using coal? Because they don't have natural gas like we do. We've got tons of natural gas in America. My proposal would be to ship that natural gas in the form of liquefied natural gas. It would be shipped to China and India. It would be very cost competitive. And economically, it would force them to use it because they're not going to use dirty, expensive coal when they've got cheap, clean burning natural gas. We'd make money. They would cut their pollution and we'd really do something about climate change. Right now, it's mostly symbolism, paying more for gasoline and paying more for electricity. And we're never going to get enough electricity from solar and wind. We don't now, and we don't have enough storage. Someday we will. Someday we'll have the technology to do these things. I really believe that. But in the meantime, we've got to develop natural gas and get it out to China and India so that we attack the global pollution problem.
John, in the limited amount of time we have left, where can our listeners go to learn more about your candidacy and how they might get involved with your campaign if they so choose?
Well, I'm the only candidate that has the detailed plans listed on their website. They can go to johncox.com. They'll see the 40-page plan I have on homelessness, the tax cut, the education plan, the public safety plan. I'm a businessman. I'm an outsider. I'm not interested in other jobs. I don't need to do this. I'm doing this because this state is so badly run. And these problems I've talked about are management issues. They're not political problems. They're actually solvable, fixable management issues. And we need a manager. We need an experienced business person to attack these. Another politician or media celebrity is just going to entertain us but not get the job done. And I don't want to sit another 10 or 20 years waiting for the job to be done or the problems to be fixed. We've got to do these now so that we can live a better life.
John Cox, Republican candidate for the office of Governor of California, and the only candidate to date who has taken the time to share his views with independent voters who follow the show. John, my purpose is to help create a more informed electorate. And I'm sure some of the audience will agree with your position, some will not, but they should all respect the fact that you aren't afraid to articulate your positions. Thank you for that, John. And again, thank you for joining me on Deconstructed.
Thank you, DJ.